Funding for Think comes from SMU's continuing and professional education.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Stephen Becker, and today for Chris Boyd, who's on vacation. Today on the show, we're looking at the year in music. Which albums stood out in 2010, and what do the critics think of some of the artists who dominated the charts this year? My guests today are Mario Terradell, music critic for the Dallas Morning News, and Preston Jones, music critic for the Fort Worth Star-Telegram. Guys, welcome to Think.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
So before we delve too far into your top 10 list, I'm just curious, how many CDs and albums do you think you guys get a year to take a look at, or even in a given week?
Probably something like 30, 40.
In a week?
Yeah.
So yeah. Whatever that is times 52 is quite a lot.
I have stacks and stacks in my house.
So you've got all these crates of CDs. How do you decide what's worth your time to listen to?
I think a lot of it is, well, you do read here and there what has a buzz and what seems to be moving up the charts as well. And then a lot of it is just plain old what looks interesting to me. So we'd kind of go from there.
Yeah, I mean, you have your favorites, the bands that you've always kind of followed along and you want to keep tabs on them, but you talk to people, you read, you check out blogs, you hear people, you know, that you run into at shows, and it's just kind of this ever-evolving, rolling way of finding stuff out.
It seems like a lot of it is what, like you said, advanced word, you've heard about it. I mean, I've seen those crates of discs that you guys get in, and, you know, does the CD that you've never heard of get much of a chance?
It really depends. I mean, there's sometimes it has to do with the volume, because there are some weeks where you have, like, you know, 20 and 30 new releases, and there's no way you can humanly get through all of them and hear them before all those albums hit the street. But sometimes, you know, you just get a spark and you kind of pick one up and go, you know, I'll just give this a shot. And you may know absolutely nothing about it. And I've found some really great albums that way. I mean, you also find some dogs, but, you know, for the most part, it's just you kind of try to keep those to the side, keep them in mind, and not, you know, let them fall through the cracks.
And it seems like, you know, across all forms of media, the album is really the dominator of the top 10 list at the end of the year. But in this age of the single and digital downloads, is it still worth the time to rank albums? Or did you guys consider at all maybe doing a top 10 songs of the year?
I didn't. I mean, I'm kind of the opinion that albums are still pretty important, even in this kind of age of atomization, where you have, you know, people releasing songs on Fridays or Wednesdays or whenever. And so I, for me personally, I thought it was important to kind of consider albums first and singles below that.
I look at it as you still want to hear a body of work. You know, I hate to say this, but really just about anybody can get lucky with one song. But can you carry it through a record? Can you carry it through 10 songs, 12 songs, 15 songs? That is what's really important to me. And plus, if you have a song that's overplayed, you know, you're going to want to have something else there by that artist that could lead you in a different direction. So I still think that body of work is very important.
When you're piecing together your top 10 list, one thing that I've always been curious about is, how do you compare apples to apples? I mean, how do you line up a rap album and a country album and a, you know, a jazz album or whatever you may be considering for your list? How do you judge those on equal footing?
I personally just judge the music that is in that CD, you know, and first of all, I love variety. I don't want to just listen to rap albums or country albums or R&B albums or pop albums or rock albums. I want to listen to a little bit of everything. So you're right. It is an apples and apples thing. But really, if you think about it, it's also an apples and oranges thing.
Yeah. And you kind of keep, at least for myself, I feel like there's just kind of a list that you sort of have on the back burner throughout the year that you're always sort of, if you hear something that really strikes you, you add to, and you're like, I'm going to come back and revisit that at year's end. And it can be anything. And I think, like Mario said, you don't want to box yourself in and ignore something in a genre you might not listen to ordinarily. I mean, if, like, we were going back earlier saying people are talking about this or you're hearing about it more and more, you know, check it out and maybe you'll find something.
Okay, well, now it's time to get to the lists. There was one album that you guys may not know this about each other, but there was one album that made each of your lists, and it was The Suburbs by the Arcade Fire. Now, Preston, it was your number one album, if I remember correctly. So I'll let you go first and tell us a little bit about it.
This was an album that came out in August, and I really connected with this on a deep level. It kind of just spoke to me and my experience in growing up in the Midwest and the suburbs and kind of that alienating experience, and I could really kind of hook into that, and I just never did hear another album. I mean, I heard several other great albums, but it was just that one, for out of all the albums that were released this year, really struck a chord with me.
Well, we've got a track from that album, so why don't we take a little bit of a listen to The Suburbs by the Arcade Fire. Go ahead, Mario.
If I may interject, one thing we were talking about a second ago, it was the reason why that album is on my top 10. That album is a piece of work. It is it is songs that connect to each other. You really cannot listen to that album and just listen to random songs. And that is one of the reasons why I really connected to it. It's conceptual, but it's also, from a musical standpoint, it flows from beginning to end. So that was very important to me.
And I should say that the name of that song was Ready to Start. They also have a song called The Suburbs on that album, which is a great song too, I believe. But that was Ready to Start. This was really kind of a year where some indie and critical darlings kind of broke out and had big years, including the Arcade Fire.
Yeah, you saw there were a lot of bands. Like, that was a top 10 debut for the Arcade Fire on the Billboard chart, which is kind of unprecedented for a band on a small indie label to land there. Vampire Weekend, they got into the car advertising business this year.
Oh, right.
And
yeah.
So you're starting to see a lot less. It's kind of I kind of called it the death of selling out, because for the longest time, that was what people equated that with, was if, you know, you had visibility, then you were no longer viable as an indie act. But I think you're seeing a lot more bands make that transition and not apologize for it. Like, the Arcade Fire had a song in the Super Bowl last year, and no one blinked at that, and they still are being pretty well regarded for what they do.
Yeah, that there was the Arcade Fire. He mentioned Vampire Weekend, and also The National. Those three indie bands had very big years. It really was an explosive year for all three of them. All three of them had top 10 records. Vampire Weekend's Contra was the number one album. So it was definitely a very big year for indie rock.
Do you think part of that is that those bands were being discovered through the music that they licensed for these various events that we were talking about?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's no question that plays a role, because increasingly, you know, radio still has power and MTV less so, but a lot of people these days find music through advertising. I mean, you have like the iPod commercials that were so huge a few years ago, and there were a number of bands that broke because of that. And then the Black Keys, that's another example of a band that kind of broke out this year with just thanks to advertising. A lot more people are talking about them now than they were in January.
I also think that one of the reasons why you have these indie breakouts is because there's such flux with the major label music industry that the word of mouth little guys have really, there's almost no choice for them to rise above a little bit while there's so much flux going on with the big dogs.
So, Mario, your number one album was by an artist named Lila James. So for those of us who haven't heard much about her, tell us a little bit about her.
She's in Los Angeles, R&B singer-songwriter, and this is her third studio album. What attracted me to her right off the bat is incredible amount of real R&B passion in her vocals. The songs are mostly hers from her pen, and she very deftly mixes old school and contemporary. If you, as soon as she opens her mouth, she sounds like she was born 50 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But there are definitely contemporary touches in her style of in her songwriting. So I was very taken by that, and I just, again, just a lot of passion. You believe what she is singing.
Well, let's hear a little bit of what she's singing. This is her song, "Tell Me You Love Me," from the album My Soul. So you mentioned earlier that it sounded like she'd been singing for 50 years, and I also think that she sounds like she really belongs on the Stax label, which is what she's a recording artist for.
Completely. I mean, she could have been on that label in the 70s when the original Stax was having its heyday.
So I know when you're making out a list, one of the hardest things to do is that cutoff point. You know, you only have 10 slots in a top 10. So I'm curious... what albums didn't quite make your list that you really wish that you had an extra spot for?
I needed three more.
Three
I
more,
needed three
huh?
more spots.
Just three.
Robert Plant's Band of Joy, Elton John on the Unrustle the Union, and John Legend and the Roots' Wake Up.
And if there's one of those three that you could expand a little bit about, which one do you think people shouldn't miss this year?
You know, it almost sounds like I'm an old fuddy-duddy maybe, but that Elton John, Leon Russell, just because it is such a special project, you know, the backstory on that alone is almost worth the price of the CD. It's beautiful, lovely, beautifully recorded, T-Bone Burnett production.
Fort Worth's T-Bone Burnett.
Yes, correct.
And Preston, what about you?
There were a lot. I usually have a list of like 30 something that I kind of try to whittle down, but there was Beach House's Teen Dream was another album that I really liked quite a lot, and Kings of Leon, their Come Around Sundown. A lot of people kind of knock that as being a, you know, nothing less than an update of their previous album, but I thought it actually worked really well because they kind of went in and did exactly what they've done, you know, for the last five albums of their career, which is just kind of make a good sturdy rock and roll record.
Mm-hmm. We talked earlier about songs. Did you all have a particular song that was your favorite song of the year? One that you just couldn't quit humming?
Well, there's a CeeLo Green song.
The unnamed CeeLo Green song.
That which shall not be named. There's that song.
That is catchy.
It is really catchy. And there's a management song from the album Congratulations called I Found a Whistle. I just was humming that all year. I don't know. It wasn't ever on the radio, but it was just one that stuck with me.
We should say, if you want to listen to the CeeLo Green song, you can look up the clean version, which is called Forget You.
Which is lame.
And you can extrapolate from there what we're talking about.
Which is lame.
Mario, what about you?
I'm going to have to say the CeeLo Green song as well.
Really?
To me, what works so well about that song, and I was telling Preston earlier, is the title loses all of its shock value once you listen to the song because it just works. The song has an incredible amount of substance, and that title completely works with the lyrics. You know, you want him to say that.
Well, don't count on hearing it anytime here soon. We're talking today with James Cavan. I'm sorry. We're not talking with James Cavan. That was the other day. We're talking with Mario Taradell of the Dallas Morning News and Preston Jones of the Fort Worth Star-Telegram. You can join the conversation by sending us an email at think@kera.org, and we'll be back soon.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's informal courses for adults. Short courses in the arts, writing, languages, history, and communication start weekly in January. Details at smu.edu/think.
control. No dark sarcasm in the classroom. Teacher, leave them kids alone.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Stephen Becker, and today for Chris Boyd. Our guests today are Mario Taradell, music critic for the Dallas Morning News, and Preston Jones, music critic for the Fort Worth Star-Telegram. And that, of course, was Pink Floyd's Another Brick in the Wall. And the reason we played that is because each of your number one concerts for this year was Roger Waters at the American Airlines Center. So I wonder if you guys could just describe a little bit about what that scene was like.
I swear there was no consulting involved.
I saw shows this year where there were five people in attendance, and I saw shows where there were, 25,000 people in attendance, and this just kind of blew me away. And it kind of goes back to what we were talking about earlier about the album being kind of a whole body of work and how that can have that cumulative impact, because Roger Waters was touring the Wall and playing that in its entirety and recreating the stage show from 79 and 80. And it was just, I don't know how to describe it. Words are failing me. It was just really kind of a moving, overwhelming experience to see somebody put that on stage and still have it be relevant, over 30 years after its release.
It was just the perfect merger of everything a concert should be. Visuals, the audio, the music, the message. It was just perfect. All of those elements were there, and they were all huge parts of the show. And again, as Preston said, it's almost sad that it's still so relevant, but it is.
Yeah. And it seems like that's become a new trend in touring, where artists will play one album beginning to end. Are you guys a fan of that trend?
I loved it when Rush did Moving Pictures in its entirety. So.
Yeah. Yeah, and the Pixies came through and played the Doolittle all the way through. And it just depends. Some bands, really chafe at doing that, and you can kind of tell when they're going through the motions and not really into it. But there are some, again, going back to Roger Waters, it's evident that he still really enjoys playing these songs and seeing how they hit people.
My guests today are Mario Taradell from the Dallas Morning News and Preston Jones from the Star-Telegram. You can join the conversation by calling 800-933-5372 or emailing us at think@kera.org. Now, that Wall performance by Roger Waters was, as you described, a big spectacle kind of show. Another artist who came through with the big spectacle show was Lady Gaga, who I believe played here two nights in a row earlier this year. I didn't notice her on either of your lists, so I'm curious, are you guys just not fans of hers or not fans of the show, or what were your thinkings about? Did you go to the show?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Okay, so you're both there. So what happened?
Well,
I'll let Preston go.
Don't everybody start at once.
It really kind of, I wasn't the world's largest Lady Gaga fan before I went to the show, and I she can write songs, she has a voice, there's obviously a kind of a core musical ability to what she's doing, but so much of the show, it was almost like going to a Broadway show for me. I didn't feel like I was at a pop show. I felt like I was watching, a musical, and I wasn't at a concert. And that was, there's that part that's disorienting, but when that starts to trump the songs and you're more worried mm-hmm. about set changes and costume design and lighting and dancers and everything, it's like you get so distracted by it that you can't enjoy it. You're overwhelmed by it.
I'm going to give you a specific.
Okay.
There's a point in the show when she did a ballad called Speechless from the famed Monster mm-hmm. EP. Probably, in my opinion, her best song.
Yeah, that's a great song.
It's a great song. She's sitting at the piano and she's singing Speechless. And I looked at her and I thought to myself, wow, cool. Finally, a moment of true artistry. What did she do 30 seconds later? The piano's on fire.
So all of a sudden it turned into a Kiss concert is what you're
yeah.
saying, huh? Nice. So do you guys prefer to go to the giant concert that's the big spectacle with all the bells and whistles, or would you rather see an artist in a smaller venue where it's just you and the music and the artist?
It depends. I think I want a little bit of both, but I do think that some artists work better in a smaller venue and some artists work better in a larger venue. Obviously, not that I'm the world's largest Usher fan, but I don't think Usher would work in a smaller venue. But by the same token, Lela James, who I saw at Granada Theater, I wouldn't want to see her anywhere else.
Yeah, you know, it's I'm sure – just a quick question here on Lela James. I saw that her show was also one of your top shows. Did seeing her live affect the way at all you felt about the album, or were you already sold at that point?
I was already sold, but seeing her live only sold me even further.
Yeah,
because she put on one amazing show. It was so stream of consciousness. It looked incredibly unrehearsed, and that was the beauty of it.
And Preston, what do you think about the big versus small show?
I like both, but I also like to have, you know, you have festivals like the North by 35 in Denton or South by Southwest in Austin or Fun Fest in Austin where you can kind of go from place to place and be surprised and not necessarily know anything more than the name that's on the schedule. And so it's good to see shows that are big that do well, but it's also kind of fun to be, you know, surprised.
And we've got a caller that has a question about the Roger Waters show. Caroline, you're on the air.
Yes, actually, it's just a comment that I was there, and I really was amazed about how relevant it was in today's time period, knowing with the wars going on and what they were able to put on the wall for those of us who were there. It was just amazing. And the other comment was how Roger Waters' voice has aged so well, and obviously he's taken care of it over the years, but it was a great show, and I'd have to agree with you all.
I agree as well.
Yeah, and Roger Waters did a smart thing by not trying to take on too much. He got someone to sing David Gilmour's vocal parts. He got someone to play David Gilmour's guitar parts. He didn't try to be, you know, Pink Floyd for everyone. He kind of wisely split that up, and I think that probably made the show better than it would have been if he had just come and done it by himself.
It was completely an ensemble show. I mean, the band, even though it was kind of funny because even though as the show progressed, the band was more and more obscured by the wall, but it was a complete ensemble show. And I agree with Preston and Caroline for that matter. Mm-hmm. I think the show worked incredibly well, very well paced. And again, those messages, it's astounding how relevant they still are.
Well, Roger Waters wasn't the only 60s and 70s artist to roll through town this year. Preston, I noticed that you really liked hearing Robert Plant at the Meyerson. What was it like seeing such a rock god in a Symphony Center setting like that?
It's always a little disorienting when you go to the pop shows at the Meyerson because the crowd never quite knows how to react. They're at a concert and they want to cheer and yell and get up and dance if they feel like it. And they always feel it's just amusing to me to see them kind of be restrained by the atmosphere at the Meyerson. But I saw Robert Plant when he came through for the Raising Sand tour with T-Bone and Alison Krauss, and this was just like night and day compared to that because he just felt so much more energetic and kind of plugged into what he was doing. He's got a fantastic backing band in the Band of Joy. Patty Griffin and Buddy Miller are among the musicians that he's touring with, and he's just, I mean, to see somebody at this stage in his career where he could just sit home and live off of royalty checks, be out there touring these songs and playing and just having a blast and completely indifferent to the people in the audience that are like screaming for Led Zeppelin songs.
And we should say that these songs are completely different than Led Zeppelin.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's a real kind of a roots Americana. He's just going back. But there's also, I mean, there's songs that he covers by like the Low indie rockers out of Minnesota. But it was just really kind of electrifying to see him cut loose. I mean, because you are still, even though he's doing this new stuff, you know, that's part of Led Zeppelin a few feet in front of you.
Yeah, oh yeah. So Mario, there was one show that jumped off the list to me that I was not quite expecting to see, and it was the Scorpions. Were you surprised at all
that
the Scorpions would make your list of the 10 best concerts of 2010?
I was actually very surprised, and I was very surprised at their performance. I mean, I went to that show because it was the last show, they're on their farewell tour, so I thought, you know, I'd like to see this. And I've been a fan, I like them. And it was really amazing because Rat opened and I thought Rat was horrible. so it was kind of weird what to expect after Rat, and they were just on 200% from the word go, and I was just incredibly amazed to see that how much they're still kicking.
I would have been extra surprised had Rat made your top 10 list. I guess they have played round and round enough for probably everybody's life at this point. So, Preston, one of your other favorite shows was Gorillaz at the Verizon Theater. I wonder if you could explain a little bit about how that concept works. They're sort of a different band concept, I guess. If you could explain for people who aren't familiar with them how that works and how they were able to blend those elements into the show.
The Gorillaz show is probably one I went into with a little bit of hesitation because it is such a high concept thing. It's Damon Albarn and Jamie Hewlett created. It's basically a virtual band. They're cartoons that they've had videos and they've done a few performances before. They were on the Grammys a couple of years ago with Madonna. They did the hologram thing. But what they did was actually really smart. They had a massive video screen up above the stage, and they basically just kind of projected these characters that they've created up onto that screen while the musicians are playing below it. But they didn't obscure the musicians, but they kind of managed the neat trick of pulling it off to where you could see both the people making the music and the virtual stuff that they were intending you to see. And he has actually half the Clash in his band now. Damon Albarn does, so
it's
you don't want to hide them.
Yeah.
So it was really, I was really kind of surprised that they were able to bring all of that to life without making it seem like it was kind of overworked, because it is really dense music that they make. There's, you know, there's string sections and guitars and all this kind of crazy stuff, and so it was really kind of a pleasant surprise that it was as thorough as it was.
And we're going to go to another call here. We have Bill in Burleson. Bill, you're on the air.
Yes, good afternoon, Stephen.
Hey, good afternoon, Bill. Thank you for calling.
Well, thank you for having me, and I'd like to thank Preston Jones. I'm subscribed to the Star Telegram and enjoy his reviews of CDs and concerts over the years.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. And Mario, I just want to tell you, every time I have a spring cleanup, the other half complains about all the Mario Teredo Latin reviews that are in the boxes that I've got stacked up that I've kept from you from over the years. And I would like to ask you, who would be your pick for Latin Album of the Year? Just general, all genres mixed together.
Okay, thanks very much, Bill. So, Mario, what was your favorite Latin album of this year?
Probably the Juanes record, and that would be, it's an album called Parce. It's P-A-R-C-E. The cool thing about it was that, you know, it's the signature sound, but added to it, he's kind of experimenting with a little bit of Radiohead, electronics, etc., couple of other sonic textures involved there that are different for him. He's a really strong singer-songwriter, always has been, and just this record kind of goes off in a few different tangents for him, and I think it works.
So we talked about the shows that we really liked this year. Was there any, outside of the Lady Gaga show previously mentioned, was there a show you were really looking forward to that you went and were just kind of left flat?
You know, surprisingly, the show that I was really looking forward to that I went and left and was kind of was the Pixies show. It was a great, it was a solid show. That, you know, they sound good, but they just, it really, the crowd seemed to be more into it than the band was, and I think that was what kind of threw me, was that the Pixies are one of those bands that's like people talk about in reverential tones, and I wish, you know, they were together and coming and touring, and it was just sort of, it was okay. It wasn't, you know, the mind-blowing show that I thought it was going to be.
Mario?
I'm trying to think, and I'm not coming up with one. I mean, this is not necessarily an answer to your question per se, but I thought the Tom Petty show was great. I have no problems with Tom Petty. I enjoyed it very, very much. The only thing about a Tom Petty show is it's just not exciting. Mm-hmm. I don't mean that in a bad way.
Well, there's no fireworks.
He doesn't set his piano on fire.
Yeah, there's no flaming pianos.
It's not even from that angle. I mean, he's a really great, solid rock singer-songwriter. Just in concert, some of those songs don't quite... They just don't quite blow up the way they do coming out of a car speaker. I mean, I enjoyed the show very much, and I gave it a good review, and I stand by it. It just wasn't one of those shows that I walked away from the show thinking, well, that was pretty cool. Petty was much looser than I thought he would be, but I didn't walk away from the show thinking, wow, that was an experience.
And we should mention that, you know, not every major tour comes through North Texas, even though we're the, you know, fourth or fifth largest market in the country. Yeah. Were there tours that you guys were following that for whatever reason didn't come through here?
There were a bunch of high-profile cancellations this year. I don't know that I was necessarily, like, you know, really bummed out when they didn't come
really
through.
You weren't screaming to see Christina Aguilera?
No, I wasn't like, oh man. But there was the one that surprised me the most was probably the Lilith Fair, because there was a really heavy local component to that, like on the tour, and
yeah,
going to be
Erykah Badu and Norah Jones,
and I think Kelly Clarkson was even on a couple of dates on the East Coast, and so I was really surprised when that fell through, because I felt like that might have been one where if they had just let it go, that they might have had more of a turnout than they expected.
I'm very surprised that there was no Texas date at all for the James Taylor Carole King tour. That really surprised me. I mean, it wasn't a huge tour, but it was a very high-profile tour that did very, very well. The accompanying CD did incredibly well. But I'm really shocked that it didn't come this way, because I've seen Taylor in this market. He plays this market all the time. So that was really surprising, I thought.
So being a concert reviewer, one of the parts of the job is getting the letter that says, were you at the same concert that I was? I'm sure that each of you have gotten them, probably on a semi-regular basis.
Yes.
What do you respond to people when they say that? I mean, music is such a personal thing, and I think that they spend their money on a show and want to, you know, have a good time. What is your response to them?
You try to respond as best you can. You know, what I've always said, and I'll still say it, somebody who goes out and buys a ticket for the show is there for a different reason than a reviewer is. When Preston and I are at a show, we're doing 50 things that all have to do with reviewing, and not necessarily the same things that somebody who's just there for the sheer entertainment of it is doing. I'm not saying that we're not entertained. We are, but it's a different animal altogether. So when they give you that sort of, you know, the trite question, well, you were at the same concert I was, you know, yes, I was, but you know what? Maybe I wasn't, because I wasn't there for the same reasons you were.
Yeah, it comes down to work versus play, really. I mean, we're there to work, and, you know, if you're there, you've been looking forward to it for 6 months, you're on a different wavelength.
My guests today are Mario Taradell of the Dallas Morning News and Preston Jones of the Fort Worth Star-Telegram. You can join our conversation by calling 800-933-5372 or emailing us at think@kera.org. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about the local scene in 2010. We'll be back after a short break.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's informal courses for adults. Short courses in the arts, writing, languages, history, and communication start weekly in January. Details at smu.edu/think.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Stephen Becker, and today for Chris Boyd, who's on vacation. Our guests today are Mario Taradell, music critic for the Dallas Morning News, and Preston Jones, music critic for the Fort Worth Star-Telegram. And that was Sarah Jaffe of Denton singing her song Clementine off of her album Suburban Nature. Now, she is somebody who really is getting a lot of attention in 2010. Why do you think that is?
She has kind of been everywhere. She's been on a couple of the tours. She went out and opened for Norah Jones. She went overseas to Europe with Midlake and opened for them as well. So that's really helped her get a lot of exposure. But honestly, she's just been, I mean, Pace Magazine has written about her. USA Today did a brief thing on her. She's KXT has played her a lot. I mean, she plays around town a lot. I mean, she's just kind of omnipresent, I guess, and that's really helped her, you know, have people hear about her.
And Mario, what is it that I know she's one of your local favorites for this year? What is you like about her?
I think there's something that's very raw and real about her, and I think that every time she writes a song and every time she sings a song that she writes, she sort of connects with you on this sort of underneath the surface level, one of those seeping in and sort of almost like crawling up your consciousness and just grabbing hold of it. There's something very, very, very primal about the way that she composes and the way that she sings. And I think it's very arresting. I mean, you hear her once and you're like, whoa.
Yeah, I have to say, I saw her at South by Southwest. She played in a church downtown, and it was just her and, you know, her guitar, and I believe Robert Gomez was backing her up. She had a few other backing members. And what was a relatively small ensemble, just as you said, Mario, was able to just grab you by the collar. And it was absolutely one of the best shows I saw all year, and I think it was kind of nice to see that someone who sounds good on the album actually was pretty arresting in performance, too.
Yeah, I mean, that's, I think, the thing, too, that's kind of helped with her success is that she is just, you know, very consistent, and she does sound on record as she does in concert, and it's just there's always that high level of quality, and she never really backs away from that.
So speaking of Denton, I have a question here by email from Austin in Oak Cliff who asks, what are your thoughts about the music scene of 2010 in Denton? What were your favorite artists, or who are your favorite artists in Denton right now?
There were some people that thought that Denton was kind of having an off year because, I mean, the Midlake album came out in February, and that was a big deal, and a lot of people thought that was kind of an important album. But I think it was a really good year just overall because you had so many new bands. There's a singer-songwriter called Roy Robertson, whose Wonderness EP was one of my favorite albums of the year. And it's just you have more people like that coming up behind these sort of established people like Sarah Jaffe and Midlake and even Robert Gomez. So I feel like Denton's pretty well positioned to continue being a major exporter of talent for the next few years.
Mario, anybody
I don't know that I have a favorite from Denton, but I mean it's a hotbed. I mean, everybody that Preston mentioned, and also look at Eli Young Band, that's where they came out of, and they hit the national scene and did really well. And then you also have the university there with the 1 o'clock Laugh Band, which continues to be Grammy nominated. It's very much a musical hotbed. I think maybe if there's anything that keeps Denton from rising even further up to the top is the name of the city. I think most people who are outside of Texas might hear Denton and said, who? What? Mm-hmm. They wouldn't connect with it normally. So I think that probably is the only thing that's preventing them from taking on an Austin-like popularity.
So what other local artists that put out albums in 2010 were you all fans of this year?
There's a band from Fort Worth called The Orbans, and mm-hmm. their album When We Were Wild, that was, I thought, just a really fantastic piece of work from a band that sort of goes back to the Tom Petty analogy that they're sturdy, that's rock and roll, there's a little bit of blues in there, and it doesn't sound like much on the surface, but when you get in front of them in concert and see them, what they're doing, it's just really fantastic.
I'm going to once again tout Jonathan Tyler and the Northern Lights, mm-hmm. who is
and
just...
Which we should say actually made your top 10 list, right?
Yes, Pardon Me is... to me, it is their Shake Your Money Maker, and I said this already, and I'm just irked that it hasn't done better nationally, because it's just one of those kick butt records from the moment that it starts into the way all the way to the end.
Well, it's funny you mentioned Pardon Me. Let's listen to a little bit of Pardon Me right now. First thing I think when I hear of him is Lenny Kravitz, and I mean that in the best possible way.
Yeah, same basic place that we're talking about, Lenny Kravitz, Black Crowes. I mean, especially the early Lenny
sure.
Kravitz. But yeah, same realm. And one of the other thing I might add, if anybody thinks that that album sounds really good, and it does, live the band is just blows your mind.
They're playing at the Granada on New Year's Eve.
Yeah,
they
are. And they're going to go out on tour in the early part of next year with Grace Potter and the Nocturnals.
Wow, that's so big for them.
Yeah,
that's
it's going to be another combo. Kind of underrated blues rock band.
So I have another question locally related from Mickey and Addison, who wants to know, what's going on with the Polyphonic Spree? For me, that's one of the best shows I've seen in a while.
Yeah,
you guys heard anything from them?
I haven't heard a thing.
I know that Tim DeLauder is working on, I think, solo stuff and new Polyphonic stuff kind of concurrently. I don't know where that is in terms of completion, but I do know that they're slowly working on stuff. And because I think also Tim DeLauder is interested in kind of branching out and doing scoring work as a solo artist. So I know they're still out there, still kicking around, but I don't think anything's immediately on the horizon.
Have you guys seen them live before?
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing, isn't it? I mean,
you don't forget it.
It's quite a cast of characters on mm-hmm. stage because there's got to be 20 or 30 people up there. It is an amazing experience for anybody who's never seen them. So I think we all kind of hope that maybe we will be seeing them live in 2011. One thing I wanted to ask you all about is there were some really huge artists that sort of dominated 2010 that maybe didn't quite make your top 10 list, but I think it would be interesting just to hear what the critic thinks of some of these people. So I want to play a song that, for me, was a song that I couldn't get away from, even if I was buried in a cave somewhere. Let's take a listen to this song, and I'll get your opinion on it.
Greetings, loved ones. Let's take a journey.
I know a place where the grass is really greener. Something in the water, sipping gin juice, laying underneath the palm trees, and then the birds break their necks, trying to creep a little sneak peek.
What?
And that, of course, is California Girls by Katy Perry off of her album Teenage Dream. And when I played that, Preston banged his head on the table and Mario put his hands over his eyes. So,
thank you, Stephen. My ears are bleeding.
How about we vocalize a little bit what we were feeling there?
It's a catchy song. That's probably the best I can say about it.
But she is an artist who really does have an ability to get that hook that embeds itself in your ear. I mean, I think you have to give her that, maybe.
And I do. But what we were talking about earlier about singles and downloads, single downloads as opposed mm-hmm. to a full album. Okay, Teenage Dream as a record falls apart very fast.
Really?
I mean, it's three or four songs catchy, and then it's over. You know, I don't know what Preston thinks, but that's what I think.
It's a really grating album that I struggle to get through more than once, and there's not a lot I can say about Katy Perry that's positive.
It's pretty.
And I'm on the radio, and I don't want to get in trouble. No. It's to me kind of that worst sort of pre-fat, you know, it's glossy, it's expensive. You can tell they spent a ton mm-hmm. of money on it because they got all these top-line people in there, and it just sounds, you know, like pre-programmed. Condition, get it in there, it's going to sound great in heavy rotation.
Sure.
And it's just the oral equivalent of a Twinkie, I guess.
Another artist that was really big this year and has been really big for the last few years was Taylor Swift. What do you all think of her?
You're just trying to get me to...
I'm not trying to draw you off sides. I'm just asking questions that people might want to know the answers to.
No, Taylor Swift, I think, is another animal altogether from Katy Perry in that... Sort of like Lady Gaga, Taylor Swift does have some talent, but I don't think that really lies in the performance side of things, as people saw when she was on the Grammys and did the tone deaf
duet with Stevie Nicks.
Yeah, and I feel like she's kind of she's a great songwriter. She really evokes what it's like to be a 14-year-old girl, heartsick over the boy in her math class, but I don't know if she's going to ever progress past that point. I feel like all of her albums to date have just been variations on that theme. She's getting a little darker, she's getting a little bit riskier, but for the most part, she's failing to connect with, you know, the vast majority of people. And I think it's, again, goes back to yeah, it sounds great, and you sing it, and you hum along with it, and then you forget about it. I don't think she's creating anything substantive.
Mario?
I am going to forever give her credit for writing her own songs.
Yeah, that's the first thing you always hear when people talk about her, is that she writes her own songs.
You know, all three of her albums, she's pretty much wrote like 99.5% of it. So I'll give her credit for that. It's just a shame that her songwriting is so unbelievably insular and is so incredibly one note. You know, she's now 21, probably been around the world a couple times. There's a part of me that keeps thinking and saying, okay, girl, surely you have something else to write about now, don't you?
Right.
Surely you've seen more. First album, okay, I can understand that. Maybe even second album. But by this time, you know, and you listen to the song Dear John. You know, it's a really well-constructed song. But every time she says something like, you know, I was too young to mess with, you should have known. There's a part of me wants to say, and you should have known too.
Well, hey, there's nothing wrong with talking back to the music every once in a while now.
Yeah.
Another person who really I don't think any of us had ever heard of at this time in 2009 and now you can't turn around without seeing is Justin Bieber. So I'm curious.
We've hit the trifecta.
Is it? Yeah, your own personal trifecta. Is this a kid that has talent and will be around for a while and maybe might have a career like some other kids who have broken out to become stars as adults? Or is he? Are we not going to be remembering who he is in 2011?
I have two words for you: dead air.
I'll be stunned if we're talking about him this time next year. I just every inch of him feels like a flash in the pan.
Yeah,
yeah.
I'll make it my personal mission to make sure that we play some Justin Bieber next year.
Thank you.
What artists, as we're wrapping up here, what artists have you all heard of that you're expecting big things for in the coming year that we should be keeping an ear out for?
There's an artist named Janelle Monáe who had a really fantastic album called The Archandroid, and she's kind of caught fire here at the end of the year. Prince asked her to play some of his big Madison Square Garden shows this month, and she went on tour with Erykah Badu and of Montreal, and I feel like she's just kind of scratching the surface, and she might break bigger.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I agree with you on Janelle. I mean, I didn't like the Archandroid as much as you did. I thought that some of it was lacking, but I there is definitely something there. And very interestingly, she was on stage in 2009 with Rafael Siddiq.
Oh yeah,
at House of Blues, she was one of his background vocalists. So there's definitely something there. I think she's really cool. You know, I think she's good. I think there's something that can happen here with her.
My guests today were Preston Jones of the Fort Worth Star-Telegram and Mario Terrell of the Dallas Morning News. Thanks, each of you, very much for being with me today.
Thanks for having us.
All right. Once again, I'm Stephen Becker, filling in for Chris Boyd. Thank you for listening to Think on KERA, and have a great day.
Think production team includes associate producer Betsy Lewis and engineer Nilofer Arsala. Our senior producer is Jeff Whittington. Learn more about today's show, find out about upcoming programs, and download our free daily podcasts at kera.org/think. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@kera.org.
This is your source for NPR News 90.1, KERA, Dallas-Fort Worth, Denton, and online at kera.org. Also, 100.1 K261 CW Tyler, 88.3 K202DR Wichita Falls, and 99.3 K257 EV Sherman. More Think is on the way. This is your source for NPR News, KERA 90.1. It's 1 o'clock.
I'm Jeff Whittington. Up next on a special archive edition of Think, the life and death of football star turned Army Ranger Pat Tillman. After Tillman succumbed to friendly fire in Afghanistan, initial reports from American commanders overtly stated that he'd been shot by Taliban fighters rather than his own platoon mates. He was even fast-tracked for a posthumous Silver Star, which is meant to recognize valor in the face of the enemy. In August, Chris Boyd talked with writer John Krakauer, who wrote about Tillman's life and the aftermath of his death in the book Where Men Win Glory. It's a special archive edition of Think after the news from NPR.